The Joyful Friar podcast is made possible by the generous support of our friends. To support the podcast, please visit nathan-castle.com and donate today. Hi, and welcome to this edition of the Joyful Friar podcast. I'm Father Nathan Castle, your host. I'm calling this the homecoming edition of the Joyful Friar because I'm back in Southeast Texas, where I grew up. I'm coming to you from my older sister. She doesn't like being called her older. She's wiser or more mature or something. Mimi, I'm in her guest room. I'm back in this region because later today, I'm going to be with my high school classmates celebrating our 50th class reunion. We went to a small Catholic high school in Port Arthur, Texas, Bishop Byrne High School, and I was one of 76 in our graduating class. About half of those, about five have died, I think, but more than half of us are going to be together tonight and tomorrow for different activities. But I wanted to be with you first to introduce you to a next friend from this the current book, Afterlife Interrupted, Book 3, Please Let Me Explain. This came out in December, and if you're familiar with our format, we do one podcast to introduce a story, which I'll do today. We follow up with two other podcasts, one of which we call Compassionate Response. That is, as people learn of the story, read or listen to it, what it evokes in them, especially in the feedback that I get through emails and comment. So a Compassionate Response will follow this episode, and then the subsequent one will be spiritual practice, some kind of spiritual practice that, at least in my mind, springs from the story and the way it was told, something that might help you in your own spiritual journey. So today, the story that we're going to be dealing with is in chapter 7 of book 3. It's called Sylvia, Who Was Grieving Her Husband and Daughter, and Angel Amelie. I'll read you the dream. If you're dropping into this podcast and don't have the background in the phenomenon of and all of it, maybe you can read my first book because I explain things well there. But in essence, I'm contacted in the night in a dream by someone who went through trauma, often a traumatic death, and they need some assistance. And I distinguish between having a dream, which is my own psychobabble, and receiving a dream, which is someone else's content. And the content that they bring me cries out for a helpful response from me. I've made the analogy of when I was in active pastoral ministry for much of my career, I often had to take a turn with a pager on the nightstand in case there was an emergency call for a priest from a local hospital. And you might be paged and awakened from a deep sleep, but suddenly have to rally yourself and listen to details from someone at the nurse's station giving you the name of the person and the circumstance and the room and who you might, family members you might interact with, that kind of thing. So I was used to having being awakened to do pastoral ministry in a crisis. And when this phenomenon of people coming in a dream began to happen, I kind of had a category for it. It was October 27th of 2022 that this dream moved in to me. It was about 6 weeks later that we went into our process of a protected prayer and engaging the soul that brought this story. But first of all, the story is simply this. This is how I wrote it down. I keep a journal on the nightstand so that when this happens, I can quickly write the dream down as I received it before it goes away. I awoke in the night in an unfamiliar house. I got up to use the bathroom. A Natalie Cole record was playing on a turntable. It was a sad song that never stopped. I wondered how it could keep going on and on. I heard a little girl crying, "Mama, Mama," and I awoke. Well, We did go into protected prayer with the angels and saints. One of my long-term friends, Lisa, is a prayer partner, and I was able to be with her in person. She lives in Scottsdale, and I live in Tucson, so they're a couple of hours apart. But we happened to be able to be together in the same room, and to do this one face to face. Many of them are done on Zoom, but not this one. So we went into protected prayer, and we very frequently ask for the person's guardian to give us a little clarity, because dreams of their nature can be indistinct or have symbology in it that a guardian can clarify. And it also, kind of allowing the guardian to use my voice first to speak to the prayer partner, can act as a kind of mic test for the soul that is presenting the trauma that they're working through. Most of the time, these dreams are traumatic death scenes of people that were in a car crash or something else that caused their sudden and often violent death. This was not this one. It belongs to another subset of the whole experience. Sylvia, the person in this story, suffered a deep trauma that was not her death. It was the death of her husband and her about 2-year-old daughter in the same event. She was early in a marriage, early in motherhood, when her husband and daughter were in a car crash that killed them both. All at once, her marriage is gone, and her child and the life that she thought that she was just starting out all imploded. So she was showing me in the dream what it was like to awaken in the night in an empty house. And the song that was on the turntable, even the fact that it was on a turntable, those go round and round and round, and they don't stop. It could have been, a download or something else, but it was on a turntable, and it just felt like an endless circle of sadness. The song ended up being unforgettable. Natalie Cole singing Unforgettable. That's what you are, unforgettable, though near or far. Oh, the thought of you does things to me. Unforgettable. She was heartbroken, and she describes in a lot of detail her attempt to keep moving through life. She's also funny, and there's nothing funny about what happened to her, but she just had a sense of humor that makes me want to know her better. She just has a kind of a dry wit that I admire. She saw the irony or the nonsense of the circumstance that she was in, that she didn't feel like she could escape. After the death of her family, she chose not to leave her house. She got a settlement from a life insurance payment, and I think a legal settlement, because the accident that killed her husband and daughter was caused by the other driver. So she said she could have been a woman of leisure and not had to work. She was able to pay off her house note, but she said, "Why would I have wanted to do that? Then I would have had to been in my own sad company all the time." She said she could at least keep a job and have a reason to get up and get dressed and go to work. She said at work, she never was, after the accident, able to engage creatively with work, but her job had a lot of repetitive tasks where it didn't take an awful lot of energy to perform them, and she could still be of value to her employer and get some tasks done, but nothing that she did had the enthusiasm that she would have exhibited earlier. She talked about not engaging with people at work except a mandatory Christmas party and very little else, never going out after work with anyone. And she said there just wasn't room in her heart for romance, so that she couldn't even live in her heart. So she said it was a non-starter, the idea of trying to date again. People thought, advised her, maybe you should move, start your life over in a new house, switch everything up. But she felt in a bind because it was the house that she and her husband had bought together. It was the place she brought her daughter home from the hospital, and it had memories. Even if they were sad, she just couldn't imagine leaving there and going somewhere else. You might want, if you care about this story, you might want to listen to Unforgettable, the Natalie Cole recording of it. I think Nat King Cole, her dad, recorded it in the 50s, but I remember that her version of it from the early 90s, I think. It's beautiful, but it has a kind of haunting quality about it. And she used the word haunting. She said her house and the night was, it creaked. You could hear the refrigerator turn off and on, the heater, the air doing the same, the creaking noises that houses make when they expand and contract. She said it wasn't haunted by a ghost. It was just, her memories were haunted, and she could never really get away from the sadness in her own heart. Well, it as she as her story plays out, she well she she one thing I liked is she was a well-educated person, and she was not much of a television watcher. But she once she was alone in her house all the time, she said, "I found myself watching more television than I ever thought I would." And she had the kind of idea that it rots your brain, and that she just never would have thought she would watch this much television. So she thought, well, maybe I could make something while I'm watching TV. So she went to a craft store and she got a needlepoint kit. It was something, some little kit that had everything in it that you needed to make a needlepoint picture of a sailboat. And she said, I needed to have something to say to people when they wanted to know, what have you been up to? She had nothing to say, and people wanted to avoid her because she was sad. And she said she needed something to say. And so she would say with too much enthusiasm, oh, I've taken up needlepoint. And then she said she still had a few gift-giving occasions with somebody in her circle of friends or coworkers. And if somebody had a boat, well, she'd make a little needlepoint thing of a boat to give. And she thought it was ridiculous, but it kept her hands busy, or it made her feel better about having nothing to do. And she said, sometimes I could get absorbed in it, and for a moment I'd have relief from my grief. But I just like the way she described that. She's kind of laughing at herself about the need to be over the top excited, you know, with fake enthusiasm about making a needle-pointed sailboat. Well, it, the long and the short of her story was that after some years of this repetitive routine, she said that the record that kept going around and around and singing a sad song was her life, and that she thought it would never end until she got a medical diagnosis of uterine cancer. And it was advanced and ultimately fatal. She said, I didn't run out of the room exclaiming to people, good news, I have uterine cancer. But she said, inside me, I thought, maybe this is my golden ticket. Maybe I don't have to live a long life here. Maybe I'll die sooner than later. She also told us that she wasn't a religious person, except she had a little bit of experience of church in early childhood. She and her husband didn't pay much attention to religion. They were young and healthy, and she said they hadn't had any deaths. All their parents were still living. Big questions of life, death, afterlife are ones that just hadn't come their way until what she called the very bad day. She did wonder after that about an afterlife and whether there was one or not. But she also said that she was very competent inside her marriage. She was the driver of things, the organizer. And when she got this medical diagnosis, she got busy with the practicalities of appointing someone as with you know, with durable power of attorney for health care. She said she lined up all of the services that she would need as she got more and more ill, and she had appropriate support and visitation from people who cared about her. She said, you know, I was competently cared for is one of the things she said. And then as she got toward the end of her illness, she didn't want to be asleep to her death. She wanted to be alert to whatever it was. She wanted to experience the whole of what her dying might be. So she chose less sedation than someone dying of cancer might have. She described when her death came that she experienced leaving her body, and two things happened almost simultaneously. One was the absence of cancer pain, and the other was the experience of being surrounded or immersed in beauty. She described, she told us about herself that aesthetics were always important to her. So her surroundings, her house, her perhaps the way she dressed, she cared about beauty and how things looked. And I was an art student in college. I also am that way. Even if I'm, you know, I've lived a vow of poverty most of my life and lived with in all male households most of the time. And they are our living quarters can look like frat houses where something got put down on a table and there it sits forever. I've always had an interest in, without spending much money, at least decluttering and maybe painting something or rearranging things so that it's a little more pleasant to the eye. Sylvia and I share that interest in aesthetics. Well, anyway, when she left the body, she just said it was beauty beyond anything I'd seen before. The story goes on, but so do the next two episodes of this podcast. If you'd like to know this story in greater detail, it's told in Afterlife Interrupted, Book 3. Please let me explain. It's, I think, Chapter 7, Sylvia, who was grieving her husband and daughter. This will soon be an audiobook. It's not finished yet, but it's waiting for me to finish proofing the recordings and then get it uploaded to Audible. But I'm going to leave it there for now. I think you'll enjoy getting to know Sylvia and later the family with whom she'll be reunited. But for now, this is Father Nathan, thanking you for being with me. Remember that you're always in my prayers. God bless you and have a great day. Bye now.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Joyful Friar. Please like, follow, and subscribe. You can visit me at nathan-castle.com. Send me a message by clicking the contact button. God bless.